Hello, everyone. Welcome to Measuring the Score podcast, the podcast where we offer our opinions on film scores and the films they're inspired by. I'm Chris.
And I'm Leslie.
Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. How you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing good, Chris. How are you doing?
I am very tired.
So am I. It's tough working and having a newborn.
And recording on a podcast.
Right.
But we're doing it. We are bringing you this episode.
We're doing it, Peter. We're doing it.
I knew you were going to do it.
Welcome back to Neverland, Panda Man.
Bangarang. I think we're getting delirious every time we record an episode.
I think we need to cover a hook one day.
Yeah. That would be fun to do.
Don't trail off and yeah, no, we need to cover
a hook. I can trail off if I want to. Tell me what I can do. No, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
Well, before we begin, today we're going to be covering the quintessential, iconic 1980s movie, The Goonie.
The Goonie.
Then we're going to cover the sequel, The Goonies.
Christopher.
I'm very tired.
I think there's something wrong with you.
I just said it. I'm tired. Okay, today we're going to be covering The Goonies with music by Dave Grusin. But before we do that, Leslie, what have you been listening to?
The Butterfly Circus.
Well, there is a reason why, but we're going to talk about... We don't want to cover why you've been listening.
No, but I was listening to Butterfly Circus. Guys, it's a short. I did post the link on our Facebook page if you were curious about the sound of it. I loved it. It was only about 8 to 13 minutes long. It wasn't long at all, but it left me wanting more. I've never listened to anything that has, you know, made me want to listen to more of it. But to me, that was too short. I wish it was longer. I really enjoyed it.
So there is a really big reason why she was listening to that. And you'll find out why in several episodes. Several episodes. I've been listening to, you're going to like this, I believe it's an artist, it's the Marcus Hedge Trend Orchestra. I found it because
sounds like a tongue twister.
I know. I found it because I was trying to find, what was it? I was trying to see if Nintendo had, like, official soundtracks on Spotify. So I typed in Koji Kondo.
Right.
And when I did that, this person popped up. I believe it's one person. I mean, judging by the name. Well, one of the albums he had was The Wind Waker Reorchestrated.
Interesting.
So I was like, okay, I'll listen to it. It was really, really well done. Now, I don't know if he's using a real orchestra or if it's a orchestra with a computer and everything else, but I'm serious. It sounded really good. I was like, okay. And he would kind of change a couple of things around to where they sounded exactly like the original piece, but he would just add more to it. So I was like, okay, well, you know, what else does he have? And he had Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask.
Ooh, I don't like that game.
Yeah, I know. But the score for both of them was really, really good. So, you know, listeners, seriously, check this out. It's the Marcus Hedge, I believe it's Marcus Hedge's Trend Orchestra. He has like a ton of different video game. Yeah, Marcus Hedges Trend Orchestra. Ton of different video games. I think he's got like Donkey Kong on there. He's got some Mario stuff on there. But he does have a lot of Zelda on there. It's really good.
I'll have to go and listen if he's got Zelda on there.
I think the newest album on there is a Pokemon, which I'm not a big Pokemon person, but I think I might listen to this just to see how he does.
Okay, that sounds cool.
So now we're going to get into one of your favorite films of all time.
Yes, you know, a few episodes back, you talked about your top five movies. Well, this is in my top five movies, is The Goonies.
Really?
Yeah.
It's in your top five?
Yeah.
Where do you rank it?
Probably around four.
Around four?
Yeah, around four.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I have top five. You couldn't tell me your top five, but well, I got a top five.
I can't tell you the top five. I mean, it is what it is. Don't judge me.
I'm not judging.
Yes, you are.
As I look at you with my judgmental eyes.
All right.
And we've lost Chris.
Oh, yep. Yep. I'm gone. I am gone. Okay. I'm getting delirious from lack of sleep, and I'm from working, and still got to edit this episode here and try to put it out for tomorrow.
So, guys, as Chris said, this is The Goonies by Dave Grusin. Dave Grusin was well known for movies such as The Graduate, not The Gladiator. I can't read my writing, guys. The Graduate, Tootsie, and On Golden Pond. So he was notorious for writing jazzy scores. So this is a first for him when he was asked to do this. The movie was released in 1985, and it made $125 million at the box office.
Well, not just jazzy scores. It sounds like he's more in the drama range. That's what he's really known for. I mean, because you got, let's see here. I just saw it. All right. The Firm with Tom Cruise.
When did that come out?
93.
Yeah, see, that's before. That's after 1985.
Right, but still, all right, so...
We're talking about 1985.
Fine, I will back this up.
Go back in time.
Well, all right, so My Bodyguard, Absence of Malice, The Electric Horseman, The Champ, Heaven Can Wait.
That was a good one. I like that one.
Mr. Billion. I mean, these sound more... A lot of them sound more drama. Some comedies mixed in there. So, yeah, he was not really known for action adventure. Or just
what I said.
Okay, so I was looking at IMDb trying to figure out. I didn't hear all of what you said. I apologize.
It's okay.
This episode has just started off badly. I'm really wondering if we need to stop it and start it over.
We need to keep on going.
I'm pretty sure the listener is going to be like, this dude has lost his mind. He's not listening to anything. He can't even say the intro good. I mean, he said The Goonie, not The Goonies.
No, we're out of human element. I think that's why people like listening to us.
New listeners are going to be like, this guy's nuts.
Let's listen to Jaws. Wait a minute. He's gone downhill since Jaws.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Let's continue.
So, all right. So, he was more known for not adventure films. Did you mention Lucas?
No, I have not mentioned Lucas yet.
All right. So, that was one of the films, when you was listening to the score, you were like, this sounds like Lucas.
Yeah. So, you know, when you started listening to this score, it's got the quintessential 80s synthesizer.
Yeah.
Everybody was experimenting with synthesizers in the 80s. Well, when I started listening to score, I'm like, this sounds familiar. I've heard music like this before. Where have I heard this from? And I was thinking, and I'm like, Lucas. So I went to go pull Lucas's score up, and lo and behold, David Grusin did the score, and he used what? Synthesizers. So it kind of has the same feel as Lucas.
Okay. Which is what? A drama. Now, did Lucas come out before The Goonies or?
After.
After?
I think it came out after.
So I wonder if he was like, I really like what I did for The Goonies. I'm going to use it for this.
Quite possible. I know that when I used to watch the local channel here when I was a little kid, you know, it would play Lucas all the time.
Yeah. Well, which is crazy because The Goonies has Corey Feldman. Lucas has Corey Haim. So that's... Oh, and both films starred Cary Grant.
Right.
That's pretty good. That's pretty cool.
Ironic, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
So, some trivia before we get into the score. Sean Astin was allowed to keep the map from the movie, but his mom found it and thought that it was a piece of trash, so she threw it away.
And his mom is Patty Duke.
And Ramsey really slapped Robert Davi. She was told to hit him as hard as she could. So anytime you see him hitting the guys, she was really hitting them.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And lastly, the pirate ship was real. It was a real pirate ship. After the movie, they tried to give it away. No one wanted it. So it was scrapped.
And the cast was not allowed to see the pirate ship before the scene was shot. The director, Richard Donner, really wanted to get their genuine reactions.
Cool. I did not know that.
Yeah. See, this is why you have me on here. Just to mess up the intros and give you actual good trivia.
Oh, I see.
Yep. Yep.
I'm so glad that you figured it out, my mind, for me.
Oh, man. All right. So let's talk about the score itself. Now, listening to it, when it first starts up, you get for the first track is Fratelli Chase. Now, I think this is the most iconic score track from the movie. Because every time you think of or you hear something about the Goonies, you hear this track playing.
And it's kind of set up like an overture, in my opinion.
It really is.
It's like an overture almost.
Or a suite.
Right. So you've got, this epic chase. Hence, the Fratelli, what is it called? The Fratelli Chase?
Yeah, yeah.
Hence the name of the piece. But it's really sweeping. It is a little fast-paced music. It's very catchy. It gets stuck in your mind, as soon as you hear it. And
what kills me about this track, though, is it's very sweeping and everything else. It's very epic. Also, it goes in the Data's theme.
Right. And I noticed that theme later. They played that motif later in the score. He plays it
throughout the entire score.
Especially when you start seeing Data in the movie, which we'll get to.
Oh, yeah.
But they play it again when he walks the plank. There was a score piece about the plank. I cannot remember because it's such a long name for that piece. But you hear Data's theme in it.
I love that theme.
It's just, very catchy.
It is. It gets. I think that that one. That one little theme stuck in my head more than any other piece in this whole movie.
So do you think...
Here it is. Treasure, Data, and Mouth, and Walk the Plank.
Yeah, see, I know I had the word plank in it.
Yeah.
But does that score piece pop in your mind when you're making cables for work? Just curious.
Yes, the whole time I'm making an Ethernet cable, I'm thinking... Now we're going to get a copyright strike.
No, we're not. Anyway, so the score is actually a mixture of the orchestration and synthesizers, which we just talked about. It is a continuous piece of music. There is some sort of flow when you listen to it by itself. Now, Chris and I listened to the 25th anniversary version of the score. So there are some score pieces in there that did not make it into the movie. Like Octopus.
Yeah.
Octopus?
Yeah, Octopus. That one, it does not really, in my opinion, doesn't really fit with the rest of the score. Because when it pops up, it sounds like an old B horror movie.
And it's very short.
There's
no synth.
And it was just like...
It was darker than the other pieces I noticed.
It really was.
It's like not lighthearted at all.
Speaking of darker, now there's a lot of moments. Now, granted, I know there's a lot of dark moments in the film itself. Don't get me wrong. But there are a lot of moments in the score because you get this really, fun theme. You got the mystery, with the synthesizers. You got Data's really fun theme.
And I like the use of horns, too, because he used horns in such a way that it made the score sound adventurous, like it was an adventure film.
Right.
So the horns were played nicely, or placed nicely in there, because it added to that adventure.
Right. But what I was getting at with the darker moments, though, it's like it sounds almost like a horror movie with, you know, the Bernard Herrmann string. You know, and I get it's the drive at home that there's a dead body and everything else later on in the film, but it's very striking listening to the score on its own.
Yeah, it does. It's very contrasting between this lighthearted.
Yeah, it almost didn't work. And I was like, I mean, because I was listening. At that moment, I was having a very hard time sticking with the score, you know, continuing to listen to the score. It was a lot of moments in there. It was just like, I'm going, what's going on? I know this is happening in the movie, but listening to it, there's almost no reason, no build up to this. It just happens. You know, was it just me, or is it?
So, because this is one of my favorite films, it was kind of hard for me to separate nostalgia with the score.
Right.
So, it was hard for me to just listen to the score, because listening to the score helped me relive the movie in my mind. There were instances, as you mentioned, that kind of sounded jarring to me while listening to it in entirety. And there are some of those pieces, like the octopus, that just didn't seem to fit because it didn't have the synthesizer and it sounded dark. The piece immediately after that was also dark sounding as well. But for the most part, you know, I like the Fratelli chase. I do want to discuss, as I always do, a single piece within the score. And so we're going to talk about Playing the Bones.
Okay.
So what are your thoughts on this piece?
I liked it. And now it was very different from the rest of the score.
Right. There was no synthesizer in it at all.
That you could hear. Now I don't know if he had something in the background that we
maybe the organ effect that he had in there.
The organ may have been synthesizer just from listening to it. I could be wrong.
It didn't have that synthesized feel that you heard in the rest of the score, like at the Wishing Well piece, which was real big.
Right.
Synthesizer.
Now, all right. So the Playing the Bones, I thought it was really cool. I like the use of the percussion.
Right. So, you know, the piece starts off with this gong. You hear this gong sound.
Right.
And then you hear this run that, you know, the instruments played. And then you begin to hear the percussion. Sound like a bongo playing.
Yeah.
Which kind of was reminiscent because, you know, the score piece was Playing the Bones. And, you know, if you did not watch the movie and you're listening to this piece, you see bone in the title, and the bongo kind of reminded me of maybe what the sound of bone would be. You're right. Hitting on, you know, a skull maybe. But you hear this bongo piece in there. And then of course you start hearing the organ playing the wrong notes or the chords, because he was playing certain chords.
Right.
Which, you know, later in the film you see
right.
them actually playing this skeleton organ. So he incorporated that as part of the score piece, which I found great, fascinating, but you would not have known that they were playing this bone organ unless you watched the film.
Right.
You wouldn't have gotten that just by listening to the piece of music. But I liked the piece. That was one of my favorites, I think, of the score.
Yeah, it was really cool. I did like it. I liked Fratelli Chase just because it really does give you a sense of the rest of the film.
Lighthearted adventure. Right.
Lighthearted adventure. It doesn't go too dark. It gives you, you know, the very
right.
fun Data theme. And, you know, it's just, you know, it was really fun and pleasant to listen to. And like for our Instagram video, I used Fratelli Chase. And that's what I will continue to use.
Well, even,
because that's the most iconic one. And, you know, as I've said.
And even in the darker pieces, especially in the movie, you still had a lighthearted feel to it. It wasn't, he didn't take it out, you know, like you hear, like Insidious, you know, you right, hear right. The spider sounds that seem to be real popular with the violins these days, you know. You didn't hear any of that. He still kept it lighthearted, even though you did have some of those horror elements, like the fellow being shot in the head. The fish heads, for example, that the girl saw, you know.
Oh, yeah. It jumped out of the bushes. It almost killed us, I swear to God.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Now, I almost don't want to say this, because this score is very iconic, and you have such a huge fondness for this film, and as do I. I love the movie. I still do. But listening to the score on its own, I had a real hard time continuing to listen to it. You know, I had a really
you
hard
time. You got bored,
time.
Huh?
Well, I got bored, and it just, it wasn't connecting with me.
That's because it's the 80s.
Well, I don't know if it was that, because I do like 80s scores. But for some reason or other, listening to the score on its own, for me, it just didn't jive. It didn't connect. You know, I was just kind of like, okay, I just wanted to hurry up and end.
I just wanted to end.
I just wanted to end so I can hurry up and watch the movie. It's like, okay, I'm done. You know, and I hated to be like that. Because, like, remember the show The Goldbergs?
Right.
All right, there was a whole episode where they did The Goonies, and they used Dave Grusin's music. And I remember when it popped up, I was like, oh, this is great. But listening to it on its own, I didn't really like it on its own, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. Because there's some pieces that I listen to that I don't like on their own, and you think that they're the most wonderful creations, and I'm like, yeah, this is kind of boring.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was Child's Play 2 was the one that you were like,
Child's Play 2 was too grand for its purpose.
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's how you feel. That's not how I feel.
Right. Too grand for its purpose.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I liked what he did listening to it. I liked the themes. I liked, you know, the overall what he was trying to achieve. But for some reason or other, I just couldn't really connect with it.
Well, we've had this discussion before. There are some pieces that don't have that continuity that are always better watching it with the movie as opposed to listening. And even with our composer interview that we did with
Alex,
you know, Alex said that he worked hard on making sure that his pieces are ready for the listener to listen to on their own. And he, you know, he goes through special provisions in order to do so.
Yeah.
There's some scores like Beverly Hills Cop, for example, you can't listen to the score by itself because it's just the same thing on repeat.
It's the same thing on repeat.
Right. So, I mean, I can understand that.
From
your perspective.
So, you ready to get into the film?
Absolutely. Let's do this.
Okay, so, listeners, I have never been dirty-minded on this show. I have always tried to keep it very, very clean. But there is one glaring thing about this movie I have got to get out of the way right now. It was a bunch of kids running around in the dark, looking for one-eyed Willy.
Of course, you would say that.
The filmmakers had to have known right from the start what they were doing. I don't know if the kids knew. They might have. Maybe Josh Brolin.
Well, Josh Brolin was like the oldest of the
exactly,
bunch.
But I mean, come on, man.
I think, isn't there a commentary where they even mention that?
It seemed
kind of ironic.
And
that
then Sean Astin on the commentary, it was like every time Mikey would start talking to One-Eyed Willy, he's like, yeah, this kid's nuts.
Well, you know, this is the thing in my mind. You're dealing with pirates, you know, between 16, 1700s. I don't know many adults that went by the name of Willie. That was more of a kid's name. You know, William, the short for William is Bill.
Exactly.
Right? So he should have been One-Eyed Bill.
For crying out loud, Pirates of the Caribbean, Bootstrap Bill.
Right. He should have been One-Eyed Bill. So, I mean, it does seem kind of weird.
They knew what they were doing. Oh, my God, they knew.
Well, it's like watching, you know, cartoons as you become an adult. Granted, cartoons were originally written for adults to watch, but some of the language in the cartoons, and you're like, oh my goodness, they said that?
Yep.
They mean that? What? As a kid, you don't catch it. But as an adult, when you go back and you watch some of that stuff that we grew up on, you're like, whoa.
Now, the film opens up with the Warner Brothers logo, the classic Warner Brothers logo, and it doesn't really open up with much music right there. There's this whole sequence. You think Robert Davi's character has killed himself, but he's just escaping prison. And then that's when the music starts up.
Right. So it starts up after the prison guard finds him supposedly hanging in a cell, you know, with a note on him. And then, you know, after he knocks the guard out, then you start with the music.
I know normally, because we talked about this on Back to the Future, about not having music starting up at the very beginning and everything else. Now, for this, the slow, you know, not having music at the beginning worked. Because you're getting a sense of what's going on. You're like, okay, you know, when's the music? And then when the music finally does start, it's fun. Although it's kind of a dark thing going on, because Joey Pantoliano, he's setting fire to in front of the jailhouse and everything else. I mean, that's not really like a fun thing to
do. But it goes back to what I said. Some of even the darker moments in the movie was still still portrayed as lighthearted in the music. So then, you know, you go through this chasing sequence and you see,
yeah, and it introduces all the characters that you're going to see in the movie. I like that. And then of course it gets the data. Sorry. It gets stuck in your head. And I mean, and, Ki-Hee Kwan, God bless him. He won an Academy Award. He didn't really get much work after the Goonies, and he was about to give up on acting.
Did Indiana Jones happen before or after the Goonies?
I think it was before.
Okay.
I could be wrong. Let me know in the comments if I'm wrong. You know, he really didn't get much work, and he was, you know, really contemplating on quitting, and he was just like, okay, I'm older, nobody's going to hire me, and then Everything Everywhere All at Once happened. And he won an Academy Award for his performance. I think that's great. We have an Academy Award winner in this film.
As a child.
And he was fantastic.
He was fantastic, right?
$50 bill. $50 bill. $50 bill. I love him. I love him.
Reminds me of Bubble Boy.
Bubble Boy?
When he's got the dollar. Is it a dollar? $500. He's looking for $500.
I have never seen that movie.
You've never seen Bubble Boy?
I've seen clips of it. I know it's Jake Gyllenhaal. I was like, that looks really dumb. I don't want to watch it.
Okay. We're going to have to watch Bubble Boy, guys. And educate him.
I don't want to be educated. The movie still looks dumb.
You've got to enjoy it with me.
So the whole sequence happens, and you know, we get introduced to Mikey and his family and his friends, and you get the really hilarious sequence of Corey Feldman saying very wrong Spanish to the poor maid.
Oh my goodness. I always felt bad for her. You know, as a kid, that was hilarious. But as an adult, you see it in a different light. You're kind of horrified of what he was telling her. Oh, man.
That was
like, always separate your drugs. You know, and you've got this, hit their mom, you know, she seems very sweet, sweet woman that's trying to do the best, and you know, get them all packed up. And, you know, Rosalina has no clue what's, you know, what's going on. And, you know, I felt bad for her.
Then, you know, then we get introduced to Mikey's brother, Brand.
Yeah, for the longest time, I thought it was Brad.
I thought it was Brad, too.
I had to look it up.
I was like, Brand? Like, Brandon?
Yeah.
I was like, I have never heard that in my life.
But you notice, throughout all this, you don't have much score. It's intermittent. There's not much score at all.
I think that kind of works. I mean, we do get the iconic Cyndi Lauper, you know, Goonies are good enough for me.
But see, Cyndi Lauper was originally hired to do the actual movie music. So she was hired to actually have music in the movie.
Okay.
So, and you know, she sings Goonies are good enough.
Right.
you know, she's got a song, which is what she was singing on the TV.
Right.
It was wrote for the movie.
And it has the you know, the cast right. from the movie and the music video.
But, you know...
With Captain Lou Albano as in Mario himself.
Right.
So why? Why is all, why are there wrestlers in that music video?
It's the 80s. Anything went. Excuse me, guys. I'm getting all choked up talking about the Goonies.
No, it's because I mentioned Mario.
Oh, right. Okay. But anyway, so you notice that there is no score. But, you know, there was a lot of movies in the 80s and before that had sparse scores. Score was there, but you would hear more dialogue than you would music. It seems like nowadays it's just morphed into nonstop, you know, music.
Now, in your opinion, which do you prefer? Do you prefer the 80s method where it's not much music, or do you prefer the modern style where there is more music?
Well, you know, I grew up watching old movies with Dad, and I've talked about this before, I think, in our first season. You know, the old black and white movies, which was mostly dialogue. So you would have score in there, but most of it was dialogue. You could hear a discussion. The acting style was different then, I would say. You know, for example, like the movies in the 50s, you always talk about... what your different antagonists are. And in the 50s, it seemed like they really focused on man versus man. So, you know, his mind, what's going on in his mind, insanity, you know, that sort of thing. Those mental things. But movies, in my opinion, have changed over time because the audience has changed. People's tastes have changed. People's attention spans have changed. So, you know, I think it works for the modern movies because the dialogues in most movies aren't as intense as some of the older movies, in my opinion. Granted, you do have some intense movies that don't have dialogue, like, was it Gravity? To me, that movie was really intense. I
don't want to talk about that movie.
Right? It was really intense.
My blood pressure just boiled. Now, that would be an interesting one to do on the show.
Quite, yeah. I think we should do that.
I mean, because, well, that score did win an Academy Award.
But my point is that it's because the audience has changed.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
And people, so it works now for the audience. But I do prefer sometimes watching the older movies that don't have the score like they do in the newer ones.
Okay.
Right? And then everybody, it seems like, has cookie cutter scores in some movies.
Yeah.
Everything kind of sounds the same.
Especially the Marvel movies.
And it kind of gets annoying.
Right.
Right. So anyway.
Yeah. All right. So the film keeps going and, you know, the kids, they go to the restaurant where the Fratellis are. And there was even one sequence where they hold up the little
the balloon.
Yeah, the balloon and they see the three rocks and everything else. And the special effect looks so bad.
But back in the day, it was great.
Well, that's what, on the commentary, Corey Feldman goes, he's like, Richard, come on. You made me believe that Superman could fly, but yet you got this horrible special effect in there. And Richard Donner just started laughing. You know, and sadly, we did lose Richard Donner, who was a fantastic director. But he wasn't really known for these type of movies. I mean, he did Superman, and, you know, that was very different. But he's known for Lethal Weapon. He was known for action films. I mean, come on.
This has kind of had some action in it.
But it's more adventure, family, you know, adventure with kids. That's mainly what it is. Yes. Not known for this type of film. So, I mean, and for the most part, everything's working and everything else. Now, I think when they get into the tunnels, the movie kind of starts to suffer a little bit, in my opinion.
What? No.
Now, hear me. Now, I'm looking at it as a viewer from, you know, 2023.
You're not looking at it with your kid eyes.
No, I'm not looking at it with my kid eyes. I'm looking at it as a viewer in 2023. There's a lot of moments where this movie looks really cheap.
Well, it's not that it looks cheap. I feel like it kind of drags in places.
It does. It kind of drags in places.
As a kid, no, it was great throughout. But I think that's because our attention spans over the years have changed. You know, we need constant stimulation.
That and you notice more.
Right, you notice more. But I did want to rewind and mention something that there is a scene at the very beginning of the movie when they find the map. And they go up into the attic of the house. And they're looking, you know, at things. They find this map. And there is a moment in there where there is no score that I wish there would have been a score piece. Okay. Especially when they were, like, going up in the attic. Yeah. That sort of thing. So
you got to have, like, a synth or wonderment or something.
Right. No.
Bring in that wonderful synth theme that he has.
But there's nothing there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we get that really funny sequence where he wants Chunk, played by Jeff Cohen, to break something. So right. He just hands it to him, and he just starts counting. And I'm like, I remember watching it, and I'm like, why is he counting the key? I can't remember. I was like, boosh. He's like, oh, that's why. And I'm like, that's funny. That is pretty funny.
Well, it just goes to show you, he knew his friend so well that he knew he was going to drop the map.
Right.
Break it.
That was great. And speaking of Chunk, befriends the very large but very gentle monster, Sloth, who is very iconic for the "Hey, you guys" line in the...
I got a funny story to tell you. So when I was in college, you know, my degree was in geology. I minored in geography. So I had to take a few geography classes. So this particular geography class I was taking was from the head of the department, Dr. Sebastian. Dr. Sebastian was a, of course, older gentleman, but he had red hair in his youth. So, you know, over time, the red hair is kind of faded. Really tall fellow. And, you know, I went to college a little bit later than what I should have went because I worked to save up some money before I started going to school. And so I was in an auditorium full of kids in this geography class, and it was an intro class. Full of these younger kids, and he gets up there and he kind of looks like Sloth and he says, "Hey, you guys," and nobody said anything. And I cracked up. I thought it was the funniest thing because here he kind of looked like Sloth with the red, you know, he had red hair, fair skin, and everybody's looking at him with these blank expressions. And I'm like, oh, I feel old. And you know, and this was in 2002. Right. So it wasn't, I mean, it was a while ago, but still the kids then did not know what "Hey, you guys" were.
Well, that's what I posted on our Instagram to promote this, which I'll just go on record right now. I said this was going to come out on Tuesday. Yeah, sorry about that. But no, I posted on there. It was like, "Hey, give me your best "Hey, you guys" video. I got no videos.
Right.
I don't know if I just suck at the promotional or just nobody's seen the movie. But, I mean, I would think our target audience, you know, knows about the Goonies and knows about "Hey, you guys" and everything else. So I'm just going to go with I'm not very good at social media. Maybe. I don't know.
No, we're just old.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think that's old. What it is. So the film keeps going. Like I said, you get introduced to this Sloth character. And that's when the movie starts getting broken up into three different adventures.
Right. So before Chunk meets Sloth, Mikey meets Sloth. And he goes in the room. And then he sees Sloth. And then when Sloth bends down and picks up his tray off the floor, that's when you start hearing music. I would have liked to have heard music as soon as, you know, Mikey opened the door. And nothing played there until Sloth kind of turned around. And then you'd have... you know, those cues there.
It should have had like a little bit more of a build up.
Right. Or an intro at least to that. And you didn't have anything. So I was kind of sad about that because that was the second time in the movie that I wish I would have heard, you know, a score piece or a cue or something.
Right.
You know, play.
Right. Yeah, I can understand that. But then, like I said, you get the three adventures going on. You get Mikey and the rest of them. And then you get the Fratellis. And then you get Chunk and Sloth, which...
very endearing. They're alike, but different.
Oh, yeah. And I love the part where Sloth grabs all the pipes, shoves them up, And then you hear like all the crashing. And he goes, oh. I still laugh.
The bathroom scene always makes me chuckle.
The only problem watching that scene now, I saw the seat that this guy was sitting on that was not part of the toilet.
Right?
That was lifting him up into the air. And I'm like, oh, that just got ruined.
Because you're old.
Right. And then I'm like looking at all this stuff happening, like the water fountain going up and down. And I'm like, none of that would have happened.
Yeah, but it still makes me chuckle.
Yeah, I mean, it's still funny, but like, it got ruined. The whole toilet thing got ruined for me when I saw that. I could see the plunger on the guy's, you know, the guy was sitting on. I'm like, oh.
So then, you know, as the movie progresses, you they find a fellow Chesterfield. Chester Copperpot.
Yeah.
Chesterfield.
Chesterfield.
Right. Chesterfield. Oswald Cobblepot. Right.
Oswald. That's
the penguin was down there. Yeah, anyway, so they find him dead. You know,
Chester Copperpot.
Right.
Copperpot. Not. Yeah, that's what it is. Copperpot.
Copperpot or Cobblepot?
Copperpot.
See that? That's fast.
I think we've gotten so delirious from lack of sleep that we are missing, just mixing names up and just messing everything up.
Right. Anyway.
So everyone just bear with us. So, we apologize.
We apologize for this interruption. So, you know, there's booby traps. Booty traps. They went through all of that part, and then they got into the wishing well.
Right.
So the wishing well scene, you hear it, the score is heavily synthesized. You got this beautiful backdrop, though, of this. It looked like a kind of like a waterfall underground. Beautiful coins everywhere, you know. And then they continue underground. Well, by that time, the Fratellis have figured out that they are under the ground looking for treasure because of our wonderful friend
Chunk.
And
then a fun story on the commentary. Corey Feldman, I can't remember when they recorded the commentary, but he was, you know, a lot older. And he like ADR'd that whole sequence where he was like, but this one right here, this one's mine, and I'm taking it back. And Josh Brolin was like egging him on in the commentary. He was like, do it, Corey. Come on, do it.
The amazing thing is that after all these years, he remembered his lines.
Yeah, and he did a great job, too.
Right? Because he was a kid. But then again, I do remember poetry I had to memorize as a kid.
And see, all of these people, they still stay friends because, like, Corey, Sean, Feldman, Sean Astin, Jeff Cohen, they were all celebrating Ki Kwan when he won his Academy Award. And I think Jeff Cohen works. I think he's his manager because Jeff is no longer an actor. He's just a entertainment lawyer for actors. That's really cool.
Well, he still makes the money.
And he's already went on record and said that if there ever is a Goonies 2, he will not return.
Aww.
Yep. Chunk will not be back.
That'd be funny. We see an older Chunk that's been on a diet, lost weight.
Yeah.
Very sad Chunk.
Yeah. Sad Chunk.
Because, you know, originally in the movie, he did not want to go on that excursion. He kept making excuses. His stomach started to growl, and he says, it's dinner time, guy. You know,
like when he goes to the door and the door's locked, he goes, oh, awesome, you know, or something like that.
Right.
He was very happy. Guess we got to go home now.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the very end of the movie, his family shows up with Domino's pizza for him. It's like, oh yeah, that's healthy.
Yeah, no, just feed into that.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, the movie progresses. Then you get into the, which is one of my favorite parts, is where they play the bone organ.
Right.
To open a passageway.
And that's very genius, especially for the 80s.
I liked it. I really liked that. That was really cool. Especially with the chords written on the back. However,
and you see that throughout the whole movie.
Right. However, I think that...
Yes.
I'm trailing off. I know music was written differently. So I don't know if it would have been written the way that they have it written on the back. I would have to do some research. Because I know, you know, instruments have changed with time. You know,
yeah.
Notes have changed.
Right.
So, I'm sorry. I was just lost in thought for a second. Yeah, but
yeah,
I'd
it's
be
not
curious.
Like we're recording a podcast or anything.
Right? No. Not at all.
Yeah.
This is not live. No, guys.
No.
This is pre-recorded.
Well, I mean, technically it is, but...
But you see what I'm saying.
But I'm lazy. I'm lazy, and I don't like doing a whole lot of editing, so...
You know, that was one thing I hated in school was editing. That's why I never went into anything digital.
I think just about every podcaster hates editing. They love recording it because it's like the most fun thing to do and everything else. Then when you get to the editing thing, it's like, ugh. I mean, I've gotten so lazy about it. I just throw one effect on and I don't do any editing unless there's these spikes in the waveform. That I don't care anymore. I'm just like, whatever. It's out there.
Release it.
I'm done.
So, anyway, you know, then the movie plays out to the end. You do have some...
And you get the really weird sequence with Mikey where he's talking to One-Eyed Willie and everything else, which even the actors, you know, agreed was really weird and creepy. I'm sorry. I kind of get where they were going with it, but at the same time, it was really, really weird.
It was really weird because he was obsessed with One-Eyed Willie.
We got you now, One-Eyed Willie.
Throughout the whole movie.
But, like, he's, like, steadily talking to him, and, like, he's like, guys, this is One-Eyed Willie. Willie, this is the Goonies. And I'm like, even Brand is like, he's like, what? How much did you hear? He's like, enough, Mikey. We heard enough. And I'm like, to know that you need to go into a sane asylum.
Oh, he was just a kid.
Mikey had
issues. He might not have many friends outside of his Goonies. It's apparent.
I want to know what was inside his puffer because he was steadily puffing on the thing. He went way past the recommended dosage. As an asthmatic,
you know.
As an asthmatic puffs. Myself, I know he went way too much. So his parents should have taken that thing away from him. And as small as that bottle was, he wouldn't have had that much in there. So I'm sorry.
That was not realistic.
No.
Maybe it changed from the 80s.
No.
It wasn't albuterol in that puffer.
So like Leslie said, you know, the film keeps going. You get this whole sequence with the pirate ship and everything else. And then when you get to the ending, Data's like, oh, yeah, that's when, you know, the octopus showed up. First time I watched this, I'm like, oh, it's just kids being kids. They're just full of crap. No, there was a whole sequence with an octopus.
And there was a documentary or the commentary I watched that talked about the octopus. I think it was cut scenes or something.
Yeah, it was a deleted scene. Right. And I watched it, and I'm like, and I think the reason why they cut it is because the octopus didn't work. It didn't
look fake.
And when you watch it, it looked horrible.
Yeah.
It was so bad. I'm so glad they cut that out of there.
Yeah, and the piece didn't match the rest of the score anyway.
Right. But it's one of those things when Data starts talking about the octopus and everything else, you're just sitting there like, what? Why would they? I wish they could have figured out a way to take that out. I don't know.
They probably didn't think about it.
They're probably just like, eh, whatever.
Well, everybody's on time crunch. You know, they're working on trying to get it released, and they probably didn't think about it. They listened to it, and it just went up over their head.
I can see that.
Yeah.
So, as always, we break it down to three criterias. Does it work for the film?
Yes, I think it works for the film. I think that especially, you know, the playing the bones part, because that was incorporated in the score. Part of the film was incorporated in the score, and vice versa. The other pieces, I think, worked well. It was a kids movie, so overall, he could have taken a really dark turn quickly with anything that he played, but he didn't. So, stayed lighthearted throughout, even the dark parts. Very quintessential kids, quintessential 80s. I do feel, even though with the use of synthesizers, it still works for the film because you're dealing with kids from the 80s.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those scores. On its own, it's a little hard to get into, but for the film itself, it works perfectly. And when it gets to the dark moments, it gets really dark. It gets almost horror movie vibes going on.
But yeah, he keeps it lighthearted.
Yeah, he keeps it lighthearted. Now, even if he goes like full dark for a moment, you know, he'll bring something in to lighten it up. And, yeah. All right, so favorite score, favorite scene.
Well, I've mentioned my favorite score piece and favorite scene being playing the bones. I really like the fact that they're playing an organ. You know, granted, I'm a musician, so anything music I like. But you're playing, you know, the chords on the bone organ. The music was on the back of the map, you know, I thought was amazing. But I like how he incorporated the sound of the organ into his score. However, when you listen to it on his own, and if you have never seen the movie before, you wouldn't have picked up on that fact. Right. Unless you knew, you know, listened to the movie or watched the movie. You can't listen. Well.
I get what you're trying to
right?
say.
Right? You can't listen to the movie.
So favorite scene for me, it's probably that moment where Sloth raises the pipes up and is like,
very childlike.
It was so funny. If it can still make me laugh now, yeah, you did good.
So what's your favorite score piece?
Favorite score piece has got to be Fratelli Chase.
Yeah, that one was pretty good.
I really enjoy the opening part of it, where it's like, you know, you know, the orchestra's kind of, you know, really bringing that theme home.
But, you know, I think that opening piece also captures the heart of the film.
It really does. And it puts you into the mood of the movie, puts you in the mood of the characters, their mindset and everything else. So, yeah. Yeah, that was mine for Chili Chase and the scene with the pipes. But there are a lot of moments in this movie that I love, like when the kids get the water. You know, Ann Ramsey brings the water to him. He's like, "This is supposed to be water." He's like, "It's wet, isn't it?" You
know? Well, there's a part in the movie that I've never paid attention to. I've seen this movie 50 zillion times. Like I said, it's my top five. And it was when... they come back to the restaurant after it's the Fratellis. They come back to the restaurant after being out for a minute, and they have this pizza with them, and the brothers get in a fight over the pizza, and the one brother throws the pizza to the other brother, and then they start pulling guns on each other. And I'm like,
yeah, and then he's like, "Mama, he's eating my pepperoni again." It's like, what are
right?
you, five?
Like kids, and it's like I never paid attention to the fact that he takes the pizza and he throws it at him and hits him with it. You know, I thought that was very comical.
And it said in the trivia that their banter, they really were like just like improvising the whole thing.
And it's amazing because they acted like brothers.
Yeah.
Truly like brothers.
And then you get the whole thing with Joey Pants, which is Joey Pantoliano, you know, having the toupee and everything else.
No, that was funny. Even to this day, I find that funny.
Yep. All right, so what could have been done differently?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, there are a few parts of the movie that to me could have had more score, or they could have extended the score to cover of that part. You know, the first one was when he was going up in the attic. You know, I wish they would have started at score a little bit earlier and then just built up into the map. You know, the second instance is, you know, when Mikey, not when Chunk, but when Mikey first sees Sloth. They could have extended that piece, like when he opened the door. I think it should have started there instead of when he bent down to pick up his food and turn around, because it was a little bit jarring to me. So there are some instances in the film that I wish that they would have expanded the score to include a few seconds before the score played.
This is one of the rare instances on the show I completely agree with everything you just said.
What?
No, seriously, there were a lot of moments where there could have been score. Even in the 80s, there could have been a little bit more score in some scenes. But overall, it really does work. It really fits the movie. You know, considering this wasn't really his type of movie, he did a great job.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I mean, that would be like, you know... a composer primarily known for horror coming in and scoring this type of movie.
Well, look at Danny Elfman. You know, we covered Sleepy Hollow with him.
Right.
And, you know, he's known for Oingo Boingo.
Right.
So, you know, and was it Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Right.
So, you know, and then now he's quintessentially whimsy and fancy.
Well, not just that. I mean, he even scored a lot of action films, dramatic films, you know, and it had like a very serious score. And so, you know, Dave Grusin, I put him right there in that same category as Danny Elfman,
right,
where he's very versatile. So yeah, I gotta give him credit for that. He did do a great job on this.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So the guys, that was our thoughts on The Goonies. Let us know what you think about it in the comments on our social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or just send us an email at measuringthescore@gmail.com. Also, real quick, I kind of want to promote this a little bit. Two things to kind of help the podcast out. We have a merchandise store. We got a lot of great stuff. We've bought some of our own merchandise. We had a mug. We got a...
I use the tote as my purse.
Yeah, she uses the Measuring the Score podcast tote as her purse, which I'm going to get you a new one.
Well, it just needs a bath.
We got some stickers and everything else. And then I'm looking around the other day at like the different stuff we got on there. I was like, ooh.
We need to get the baby a onesie.
Yes. So our new co-host will have a onesie of Measuring the Score. So, yeah. And we also have a Buy Me a Coffee setup. I'll try to update it if I can. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes it gets a little crazy. But that's basically, it's kind of like our low-budget Patreon. You know, we don't really offer anything for it. If you want to go in there and help us out. Because we are trying to get new equipment. I'm still toying around with the whole Patreon thing. I know I've been talking about it for like 2 seasons now. But I don't know. I mean, Patreon would be a lot of work, but, you know, I don't know.
We still have to think about it.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out.
It takes a while for us to think. It's like the thinking, I'm thinking.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much.
So, Chris didn't mention that our next episode is going to be 7.
Ooh. Yes. That's going to be intense.
I believe so.
I think this might be our most intense score we have covered.
I think so.
Yeah.
So catch us with our next episode. You will hear us talk about 7.
Brad Pitt and the box. What's in the box?
That was an intense movie.
It was. So you got anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Well, as always, for Measuring the Score, I'm Chris.
And I'm Leslie.
Have a good one.